like the girls riding bicycles. And stop for him once in a while. But now he signaled that we should press on and begin to climb again. Still using the corner as a guideline, he rapidly disappeared into the darkness above. Somewhat less confidently, Santa and I followed. The 35th course of masonry was a hard one to clamber over, being made of particularly massive blocks, much larger than any of the others we had so far encountered except those at the very base, and estimated to weigh between 10 and 15 tons apiece. This contradicted engineering logic and common sense, both of which called for a progressive decrease in the size and weight of the blocks that had to be transported to the summit as the pyramid rose ever higher. Courses 1 to 18, which diminish from a height of about 55.5 inches at ground level, to just over 23 inches at course 17, did not obey this rule. Then suddenly, at course 19, the block height rose again to almost 36 inches. At the same time, the other dimensions of the blocks also increased, and their weight grew from the relatively maneuverable range of 2 to 6 tons that was common in the first 18 courses to the more ponderous and cumbersome range of 10 to 15 tons. Complicatedly saying, all of a sudden, the big stones got bigger. These, therefore, were really big monoliths that had to be carved out of solid limestone and raised more than 100 feet into the air before being placed faultlessly in position. Why? To have worked effectively, the pyramid builders must have had nerves of steel, the agility of mountain goats, the strength of lions, and the confidence of trained steeplejacks, and they still couldn't have done it, I'm going to add. With the cold morning wind whipping around my ears and threatening to launch me into flight, I tried to imagine what it must have been like for them, poised dangerously at this and much higher altitudes, lifting, maneuvering, and positioning exactly, I can tell you, with less than a 50th of an inch deviation as the joints came together. Positioning exactly an endless production line of chunky limestone monoliths, the smallest of which weighed as much as 2 modern family cars. How long had the pyramid taken to complete? How many men had worked on it? The consensus among Egyptologists was 2 decades, or 20 years, and 100,000 men. It was also generally agreed that the construction project had not been a year-round affair, but had been confined through labor force availability to the annual 3-month agricultural layoff season imposed by the flooding of the Nile. As I continued to climb, I reminded myself of the implications of all this. It wasn't just the tens of thousands of blocks weighing 15 tons or more that the builders would have to worry about. Year in, year out, the real crises would have been caused by the millions of average-sized blocks weighing, say, 2.5 tons that also had to be brought to the working plane. The pyramid has been reliably estimated to consist of a total of 2.3 million blocks. Assuming that the masons worked 10 hours a day, 365 days a year, the mathematics indicate that they would have needed to place 31 blocks in position every hour, about 1 block every 2 minutes, to complete the pyramid in 20 years. Assuming the construction work had been confined to the annual 3-month layoff, the problems multiplied. 4 blocks a minute would have had to be delivered, about 240 every hour. Such scenarios are, of course, the stuff construction managers' nightmares are made of. Imagine, for example, the dawning degree of coordination that must have been maintained between the masons and the quarries to ensure the requisite rate of block flow across the production site Imagine also the havoc if even a single 2.5-ton block had been dropped from, say, the 175th course, falling the distance of more than a football field. And yet incredible accuracy had to be maintained throughout, at every course, hundreds of feet above the ground, with straight, great stone blocks of killing weight. Couldn't be done. Give you another explanation. You want me to continue? Get on the telephone. Okay, no more calls. Greeting from Graham Hancock, Fingerprints of the Gods, the Great Pyramid of Egypt. How had the job been done? The raising of these giant stones. At the last count, there were more than 30 competing and conflicting theories attempting to answer that question. The majority of academic Egyptologists have argued that ramps of one kind or another must have been used. This was the opinion, for example, of Professor I.E.S. Edwards, a former keeper of Egyptian antiquities at the British Museum, who asserted categorically, quote, "Only one method of lifting heavy weights was open to the ancient Egyptians, namely by means of ramps composed of brick and earth which sloped upwards from the level of the ground to whatever height was desired." John Baines, professor of Egyptology at Oxford University, agreed with Edwards' analysis and took it further. Quote, "As the pyramid grew in height, the length of the ramp and the width of its base were increased in order to maintain a constant gradient, about 1 in 10, and to prevent the ramp from collapsing." Remember, they got to get 4 blocks installed a minute. Several ramps approaching the pyramid from different sides were probably needed, and they had to be fitted together with optical precision. To carry an inclined plane to the top of the Great Pyramid at a gradient of 1 to 10 would have required a ramp 4,800 feet long and more than 3 times as massive as the Great Pyramid itself, with an estimated volume of 8 million cubic meters as against the pyramid's 2.6 million cubic meters. All an academician has to do is open his mouth and people just take their word for things without analysis. Heavy weights could not have been dragged up any gradient steeper by any normal means. So that means on 4 sides, 4,800 foot long ramps, that'd be 4 times 8, 2.4 billion cubic meters. They were building Mount Lassen or Mount Rainier. That's almost a mile-long ramp, 4,800 feet. The problem was that mile-long ramps reaching a height of 480 feet could not have been made out of bricks and earth, as Edwards and other Egyptologists supposed. On the contrary, modern builders and architects have proved that such ramps would have caved in under their own weight if they had consisted of any material less costly and less stable than the limestone ashlars of the pyramid itself. Since this obviously makes no sense, besides, where had the 8 million cubic meters of surplus blocks been taken after the completion of the work? Other Egyptologists had proposed the use of spiral ramps made of mud brick and attached to the sides of the pyramid. These would certainly have required less material to build, but they would also have failed to reach the top. Spiral ramps would have worked down to ground level, but they would have presented deadly and insurmountable problems to the teams of men attempting to drag the big blocks of stone around hairpin corners as they got up approaching 480 feet above the ground and the pyramid narrowed. And they would have crumbled under constant use. Most problematic of all, such ramps would have cloaked the whole pyramid, thus making it impossible for the architects to check the accuracy of the setting out during building. Anything to avoid accepting master builders. I've told you from the beginning, Enoch built it with watchers helping him. Like all construction crews, they got involved with the women on earth. That's what Genesis 6 is talking about, where the sons of God saw the women of the earth and cohabitated with them, took what they wanted, and produced the giants, decimating evil. The apocryphal literature of the Old Testament tells you of evil angels teaching things to the men on the earth. You got angels helping you. You don't have any trouble believing that this can be done. You try to have cavemen do it, it can't be done. I told you that if you believe the Bible, what are you messing with it at all for if you don't believe it? I mean, Jesus put his stamp of authority on Genesis, and that's good enough for me. You know, I'm going to say again, do you have any idea how smart Einstein would be or have been if he had lived 700 years? They got his brain in formaldehyde on one of the eastern universities to examine it. If he had lived 700 years, how smart do you think he would have been? How smart do you think you would be if you could live 700 years? Yet the Bible says they were living those ages before the flood. Adam, we don't know how long Adam talked to God before he was banished. The only thing Adam was dumb about was women. I don't find any other evidence of being dumb. And she was smart. This confirms the Bible. Bible makes it very clear. Man was smarter once, better once, and got bad, and got wiped out, and another family started over. Evolution presupposes a progressive development where all things have gone on the same way at the same rate. The earth's full of evidence of great cataclysms that change the face of the earth. And as I've already said and pointed out in this book, Antarctica once was not covered with snow, and somebody smart and intelligent mapped it. But the pyramid builders had checked the accuracy of the setting out, and they had got it right because the apex of the pyramid was poised exactly over the center of the base. Its angles and its corners were true. Each block was in the correct place, and each course had been laid down level in near perfect symmetry and with near perfect alignment to the cardinal points. Then, as though to demonstrate that such accuracy of techniques were mere trifles, the ancient master builders had gone on to play some clever mathematical games with the monument's dimensions, presenting us, for example, with an accurate use of the transcendental number pi in the ratio of its height to its base perimeter. And for some reason, too, it had taken their fancy to place the Great Pyramid almost exactly on the 30th parallel at latitude 29 degrees, 58 minutes, and 51 seconds. Thus, as the former Astronomer Royal of Scotland once observed, it was a sensible defalcation from 30 degrees, but not necessarily an error. For if the original designer had wished that men should see with their body rather than their mental eyes, the pole of the sky from the foot of the Great Pyramid at an altitude before them of 30 degrees, he would have had to take account of the refraction of the atmosphere, and that would have necessitated the building standing not at 30 degrees, but at 29, 58, 22. Compared to the true position of 29, 58, 51, this was an error of less than half an arc minute, suggesting once again that the surveying and geodetic skills brought to bear here must have been of the highest order. Feeling somewhat overawed, we climbed on, past the 44th and 45th courses of the hulking and enigmatic structure. At the 46th course, an angry voice hailed us in Arabic from the plaza below, and we looked down to see a tiny, turbaned man dressed in a billowing kaftan. Despite the range, he had unslung his shotgun and was preparing to take aim at us. If you want me to continue, get on the telephone.